Our goal today is to complete Daf Pei Aleph Amud Beis and move on to Bei Beis Amud Aleph and continue our study of the 10 established conditions by Yoshua Ben Nun for those who would inherit the land of Israel. And here on Daf Pei Aleph Amud Beis, we're about halfway through the Amud, and the Gemara tells us a story about Rebbe Rabbi Chia, Havi Shakle V'Azli Biurcha. They were on their way. V'Hayu, and in this road that they were taking, they were Yesedos. Remember, we spoke about these pegs that are caused by the cement formation on the roads, and they form a blockage for the halicha. Istalku Litzide Hadrochim. And Rebbe and Reb Chia did exactly what Yoshua ben Nun had stipulated with those who entered into the land of Israel, that you're allowed to spill over into Tzidei Adrochim, the sides of the roads, to avoid these ma'akvim, these pegs, and even though it meant entering into the fields of others, which would normally be considered asagas kvul, trespassing, but nevertheless, Yoshua ben Nun stipulated that there was permission to do so. What they noticed in a distance is a strange behavior of one of the greats named Rabbi Yehuda ben Knusa. And instead of spilling over into those permitted areas, those permitted roads, or Tzidei Hadrochim, the sides of the roads, what he did was he took upon himself a special piety. He didn't want to go into enter into anyone's fields, and therefore he starts jumping around, taking these very large steps, what we call psios gassos, and he was moving from peg to peg, perhaps jumping on the pegs, or in some way he would suffer the very slow and tedious task of moving on the roads. He did not want to go, as we said before, into the Tzidei Asados. And he would not take advantage of the Takana and the permission, the Heter that was established by Yeshua ben Nun. Amale Rebbe Rabbi Chia Miuzet. Rebbe turns to Rabbi Chia, and he says to him, who is this person, Shemare, who's exhibiting Gedula B'Fanenu, as if we are matir, something that we shouldn't be so lenient about, basing ourselves, as it were, on the conditions set by Yeshua ben Nun, and he's demonstrating that his fear of heaven is much more intense than ours, his piety exceeds ours, he doesn't want to take a more lenient way, and rely on the Ikra Adin, the Halacha, as it was established by the Tanoim of Yeshua ben Nun. He's really appearing as a Yura person. Yura means someone who goes to excess piety. Amalei Rabbi Chia, Shema Rabbi Yehuda ben Knosa, perhaps it's Rabbi Yehuda ben Knosa. Apparently they couldn't be sure if he was at a distance. Talmidi, who is my student. V'chol Maisav L'shem Shamayim. And anything he does, it's for the sake of heaven. So if he took upon himself this chumrah, this extra measure of piety, then it's sincere. He's not trying to prava godless and gaiva. This is not out of a sense of haughtiness. And kimatu legabei. And this is exactly what happened when Rebbe and Rebbe Chia got closer to this figure. Chazi, they looked at the figure, and they recognized that this was indeed Rabbi Yehuda ben Knusa, the Amar Lei, and the response apparently of Rebbe was to Rabbi Yehuda ben Knusa, Ilav Yehuda ben Knosa Ata, if not for the fact that you are this very pious, sincere person, that all his actions are l'shem shamayim, says, and Rabbi Chia testified to that effect, Gizartinu, I would have decreed upon you, and here the Gemara uses an idiomatic phrase, L'shokach begizra deparzala. I would have, so to speak, chopped down your thighs, so to speak. What that means is I wouldn't allowed you access to everyone. That's called nidui. When a person violates gaiva and yura, he can be put into Yura because he's insulting the Talmidei Chacham that rely on the Heter, on the Din. And a person who's in Nidui obviously has limited access and he cannot show up and be part of the community. His feet, so to speak, are lame, are cut down. If you look in the Shita Mekubetzes, he adds that through, as a result of Nidui, lo tehe raglo mitzuya itzakolodam, the remez is that he would cut down his feet and put him into Nidui. And there's a mashal here, I would have made it so difficult for you that I would, as if figuratively, I've broken your thighs, so to speak. The Marsha adds that osim ritzua legizra, and he explains that an animal usually has short steps, what we call psioseo ktsaros, umake raglea zubazu, and often the legs of an animal hit one against the other, smack one against the other. And therefore, koshrin la ritzuos otabos b'mokom negia saraglayim zubazuk de laharchiv psioseha. They did some sort of action as a training by placing certain straps around the legs of the animal in the place where the legs would have contact one with the other, and this would facilitate and train the animal to widen its psios. And this was the mashal that Rebbe gave to Rebbe Yehuda, that Rebbe Yehuda was widening his steps in order to, so to speak, jump from peg to peg, or to avoid these pegs. And Rebbe said that this, had I not known who you are and how great you are and how sincere you are, I would have really objected to these psios gasos. The Gemara now goes on to the ninth of the 10 takonos of Yoshua HaToeh Ben Akromim. A person cannot find his way out of the maze of the vineyards. Is mefaseg v'yorid mefaseg v'yole. The word mefaseg means menatek v'chotech. Now, as we're talking about cutting down the vines that stretch in such a way that he can't go on, he can't move on. So he can take like a machete and cut his way through. And in so doing, menatek mefaseg, he undermines, he uproots these vines. And that's the way Yored, he's going to go down through the vineyard in order to find his way because he's lost. Or mefasig viola, or he goes higher on an incline into the kerem, whatever it is, in order to facilitate his finding his way back. And Rabbi Yeshua, in effect, implemented the rabbinic power, authority of Hefker Bez and Hefker, and he made the Zmoros Hakfanim, these shoots of the vineyard into Hefker. Tanur Abanon, we learned in the Braisa, Haroach Havero Toa Ben Akramim, what if you see someone else who's lost in the vineyards and he doesn't find his way out? Mefaseg Viola Mefaseg Viora, you too, in order to save your friend and make sure that he finds his way out, you can start cutting down someone's Zmoros Shelgfanim. Achim Aleu Le'ir, until he finally is able to get him on the right path to the city, Lederech, or to the roads, so that he'll be able to return home or arrive at his destination. Vechein, and so too, who, he himself, the person who's lost Shato Ben Akromim, Mefaseg Viola Mefaseg Vioret Shiala Le'ir Lederech. So the Gemara right away asks, my Vechein, why did the Braisa feel compelled to add the fact that he himself is allowed to cut down these moros? Clearly, if someone else is allowed to do it on his behalf, he can do it for himself. He's desperate to find his way back. Mao de Tema, I would have thought, Chavero hu diyod alehecha mesalek, his friend is going to lead him by cutting down these moros to get to the right place. His friend knows the area, he knows the lay of the land. Nifsog, and therefore they will matter him to cut down these moros that are preventing and blocking his way to get to where he has to get to. So again, that's somebody else who knows exactly how to cut and what has to be cut. He's not going to cut all his moros. He's going to cut only those that would allow him a pathway through. Aval who, but he himself, he's not clear how to get out of this maze. He's lost. He doesn't know how to get to the road and find his way back. Lo nifsok. Maybe we would think that Yoshua ben Nun did not allow him to cut down zmoros. Maybe he'll cut down too many zmoros in an unnecessary way in order to arrive at his destination. Is there for Nahadre Nehedebe Mitzre? Maybe we'll force him to go back where he came from, to retrace his steps, and if it might mean that he's going to have to really make a long detour all the way around these vines, these vineyards, these krumim, Kamash Malon, no. Yoshua allowed even the person himself who's lost in the vineyards, in the krumim, to start chopping up zmoros in order to clear his way and find the path. The Ravid, the Meiri, and other Rishonim ask the following question. We have a principle, Asur Le'Adam Lahatzil Atzmo B'Mamono Shel Chavero, which means that if for the sake of saving one's life, he would have to, in a sense, rob someone else of their possessions, then he would have to pay and reimburse the owner for whatever damages he caused them to compensate him. Here, too, the man has to extricate himself from this maze, and perhaps, if he doesn't find his way, he might perish. Then we have a principle of Ein Dover Omen Bifnei Pikuach Nefesh, and L'chora, you'd have to pay for this. The Rashba says that if not for the Ravid, he would say that Takonas Yoshua was that this Toa Baderech, this one who's lost, he doesn't have to pay the Balakerem. That was the thrust of the Takona, because Almanas Kein Hinchil Yoshua Lemes Haaretz. Because if you go like the Ravid, then why do we need Takonas Yoshua? This is just an application of a universal rule that a person, to save himself, takes them, if need be, takes someone else's possessions, and he'll pay him for that. He'll reimburse him. The Ravid could possibly answer that if not for the Takon of Yoshua, it would be Asur to cut down these vines even if he's going to pay him back. Why? Because he's doing so shalo b'fnei abaylim, and it's the owner of the vineyard is not available, and the halacha that mutar liyodim lahatzil atzmo mamonos shel chavero is only b'fnei the baylim. Here it's not b'fnei the baylim, and there's no heter. And I think it's fair to assume that the Rashba l'shitaso, who rejects this Ravid, is of the opinion that it doesn't matter whether it's b'fnei b'ilim or shalo b'fnei b'ilim. In any case, you're allowed to save yourself by grabbing someone else's possessions in any way he needs to do it. And that would apply even shalo b'fnei b'ilim, according to the Rashba. The Gemara now deals with the final takana of Yoshua, the 10th Tnai, Umes Mitzvah Kona Mekomo, that wherever the corpse is found, that's where it should be buried. And the owner of the karka has no right to protest. So the Gemara asks, Uremini, is this really so? We have another braisa that seems to contradict this. Hamotze Mes Mutul Bisratya, if he finds a dead body that's left in a public domain, in other words, on the main highway, perhaps, and it's 16 amos wide, Rashi points out, which is called the Sratya in Hilchas Shabbos, and gives it the status of a Rishus HaRabim, is the Braisa says, Mefaneu liyamin ha-Isratya o lismol ha-Isratya. In other words, he should put it either to the right of this gigantic road, this main road, or to its left. Now, how do you determine whether it should be on the right side, that you should bury it on the left side? And the answer is, there are rules here. If it's a stay boor ustay near, if what's on this side of the road, for example, let's say on the right side is a stay boor, which is a field that's left fallow, and the reason why they did that is called a process that helps the field replenish its nutrients. That's called a stay boor. And then we have a stay near. A stay near is really a field that was already plowed, and what they did was they waited for the rains to come in and soak up the water, the moisture. Is mefaneu l'stei bur. In such a case, the corpse should be buried in the stei bur, in the fallow area, and that is to cut down and minimize the financial loss to the owner. Someone who's already plowed his field has made already his hashka'ah, his investment, whereas that's called the stay near, but it was in the case of a stay boor, there's not that much loss over here because, you know, he hasn't worked the land. Now, what happens if the choice is a different one? Ustay zera. The road on one side has a plowed field and on the other side, a sown field. He's already planted the field. Is mefaneu l'stei near. In such a case, relative in terms of the minimizing the relative financial loss, it would be preferable to bury the dead in the plowed field, but it hasn't been planted yet. Toyu shteyem buros, shteyem niros, shteyem zruros. If all things are equal and the fields on both sides are equal, mefaneu l'makom sheyirtze. He decides where he wants to bury this mes mitzvah. And basically, to summarize, the Braisa offers three possibilities. What you could do is, you could take this dead body and bury it in a cemetery. Or you could remove it and bury it in an adjoining field, or you could bury it exactly on the spot. Now, the first option of burying the dead in a cemetery is a real hassle for travelers. You know, go take a day off, so to speak, a half a day off, to get this corpse into the cemetery. And that much we don't have to require. All we have to do is remove the corpse to the adjoining field, again, minimizing the damage, as the Braisa rules. However, if let's say this mes mitzvah is in a situation where it is kone es makomo, that was the takana of Yoshua that should be buried right there in its spot. If we accept the takana of Yeshua ben Nun in the case of mitzvah kone makomo, that it acquires, the body acquires that site, that particular place on the road, and that's where it will be buried, then the owners of the adjoining fields would allow to object. And why does the Braisa therefore say no, that they have no right to object and will bury the mess in the field? Again, we'll decide which field, to the right or to the left. And the Gemara answers, Omra Bibi, the Braisa is addressing a unique case, be mutal, meaning mess, mutal al hametzar. The dead is laying down to the width of the road from one side of the road to the other. Again, it's a very narrow road, the size of a human body. And if you don't take and remove the corpse, but rather bury it in its place, then you are creating, so to speak, a cemetery in the middle of the road. Now, amongst the people who travel on this road are Kohanim as well. And they will contract tumah if you bury it right there. That's the heter of the Braisa of moving the corpse mitok shenita lefanoso, in order to avoid this tumas ohel of a kohen. We allowed moving the corpse is mefaneu l'chol makom sheyirtze. Now he has permission to enter into the field of so-and-so. Again, he'll decide based on minimizing financial risk which field he'll go into, and the owner of the field has no right to block him. The Meiri adds another few words here. He says, Hames mutal ala gvul shebein rishusaram lesode. Where do we find this corpse? It's exactly on the boundary between the public road and the field that it joins. If it came on she'eno makom kvura, that's not called a place of burial. Tzorech lafanosu misham. There you are allowed to, and even required, to move the corpse. V'kevin she'tzorech lafanosu, to move it. Mifaneu l'makom aroi. You try to find the best of all options, and that's where you put it. The Gemara now has a general, shall I say, analysis of the conditions of Yehoshua ben Nun. And the Gemara begins by raising the following question. Amri, is it really true that Asara, that there are 10 and only 10 conditions that Yehoshua ben Nun set, as indicated by the Braisa? No. Hani chad sreyavi. When you count them up, you'll find that there are actually 11. And the Gemara answers, Mahalchin b'shvilei rishus, the case where those who are unable during certain rainy seasons to go through the roads are allowed to enter into the sados and the tzidei adrachim, again, before they were planted, in order to shorten their road, their path, is that was not instituted by Yeshua, but Shlomo Amora. It was actually instituted much later by Shlomo HaMelech. Kedisanya, like we learned in the Braisa, Harei Shekolu Perosov Min HaSodeh. Again, we're talking about the Mahalchim Baderech, the wayfarers, the travelers. And in this case, kolu peirosav in a sada means that the halicha into a sada is not going to in any way damage the sada because there are no fruits growing in the field. But nevertheless, v'eino meniach b'nei odom likanes b'toch sadehu. He does not have to allow people permission to enter into his field. Or let's say, not that he doesn't have to, but he doesn't allow people in this field. This is what we call tzoras ayin. He has nothing to lose, the Baal HaSada, because there are no fruits growing in the Sada. And yet, he nevertheless is makpid. He insists that you go around my field. I'm not going to let you enter into the field. Is ma brios omer olav? What do people think of such a person? Ma hana yesh leploni? What does so-and-so gain from the fact that he prevents others from entering into his field? He doesn't lose anything. Ma brios mazikos lo. Nobody's trying to harm him or destroy his property if they enter into his field. All of our cause of Omer. The Pasuk says regarding such a person, again, we don't know where this Pasuk is. Meyos tov al tikre ra. What does this mean? Meyos tov al tikre ra. I'll just give it a literal translation. When you can be good, do not be called bad. So the Gemara asks, Umik Siv, Umios Tov Al Tikri Ra. We don't find such a verse. In Ksiv Ki Hai Gavna. It says it in a little bit of a different way. I mean, we're just capturing the essence of the Pasuk. And this is a Pasuk from Mishlei. And the idea that's implicit in this Pasuk is, Mi is miyos tov al tikre ra. The pasuk itself says, "Al timna tov mi ba'olav biyos le'el yodcha lasos," which literally translates, "Do not withhold good from its rightful recipients when you have the power to do so." And what we can understand from this pasuk is that if you withhold a good and it costs you nothing, that's bad. Now, this really touches on a sugya that we learned back on Daf Chaf of Zenene Vizelo Chaser. And in the classical sense, that means if a person takes up domicile in someone's chaser, then he doesn't have to pay rent if the courtyard is not omed liagra, if it's not designated for rental. But in essence, that Gemara would seem to contradict what we're learning here from Mishlei, and perhaps this was the takana of the author of Mishlei, of Shlomo HaMelech, because back in the sugya of Nenev Zelo Chaser, there the owner of the Chaser has a right to block the squatter, to evict him, and to object. Here, in our case, the farmer has no right to block those who seek shortcuts through his barren fields if they're not planted and not growing. So why is it that in one case we say it's bad, you know, for a person to, for this farmer to block someone from traveling, from walking through his field, and in the other case, it seems that if he, the owner of the chutz, wants to object and evict the squatter, he's allowed to do so. And the Marsha tells us that it all depends on what the accepted custom is. The accepted custom is that if you own a chotzer, you don't allow people to, squatters' rights to live in your chotzer. That's going to be a nuisance. But on the other hand, in the case of allowing people passage through a field that's now stay boor, that's not being used for anything, it's barren, the custom was to allow something, and therefore if one blocks the use of those who travelers, then he's considered withholding good, he is considered timna monea tov mi bailov, and that's considered al tikre ra, it's considered bad. Now again, as we said earlier, it seems that Shlomo was the one who made this takana, although again, we derive from a pasuk in Mishlei, and Shlomo is the author of Mishlei. I'm not sure if that means that he made this takana, but the Gemara seems to assume, and the Rambam writes it in Perikei Milchus Nisgemom, that Shlomo tiken, it was indeed a takana of Shlomo. Now, it would seem that Shlomo is talking about an anhaga tova. He's giving you credit for doing what's good for others, but it doesn't sound like it's an absolute takana. You know, there are many anhagas tovas that we learn and we derive from all of Tanakh, but that's not the same as calling it a takana and a tanai, that he absolutely cannot block you and object. But perhaps the Gemara knew that this was a specific takana that Shlomo instituted. It wasn't just Musar embodied in the great Musar Sefer called Mishlei, but it was really a takana. And it was so similar to the takana of Yoshua, which many of which were made for the wayfarers, that the Braisa almost mistakenly included it in that enumerated list and incorporated into the list of those takanos that were instituted by Yoshua ben Nun. The Gemara now has a kasha, a different kasha, on the minyan, on the number of Tanoi Yoshua as enumerated in the Brice. So Vesu Leka, is this an exhaustive list? 10 and only 10 for Ika, de Rabbi Yehuda. There's a statement of Rabbi Yehuda that seems to indicate another Tanai in Nochlim Eretz Yisrael. Desanya, we learned in the Brice, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Bishas, Hotzos, Zvolim. During those periods of time, when the owners of animals used to take out the zevel, the refuse, Adam motzi zivlo l'rishus harabim, a person is allowed to take all this rubbish and bring it into rishus harabim. Okay, and this refuse was now in a public domain, and this was apparently during a certain period of time in the agriculture and the farming industry, or a certain time of the year at least, when they used to fertilize fields, and what the farmers would do, they would clear all the refuse out of their barns and stables and deposit it on the road, and we'll see why in just a minute. And it says in the Braisa, Ve Tzovro Kol Shloshim, he's allowed to gather it together, so to speak, make a heaping pile out of them in a public domain for a 30-day period. In other words, up to, Rashi says, 30 days, he's allowed to leave it there in the public domain. Kidei, and what's his goal? Shehe nishov biragli adam ubiragli behema. In order to prepare it as zevel, as fertilizer, he wanted people to stomp on it, and animals to stomp on it, and that would transform this refuse into fertilizer, making it usable for zevel, lezabel asadeu. Shalmanas kein hinchil Yoshul Yisrael Saaretz. This was an initial condition established by Yoshua for the possession of the land of Eretz Yisrael when they divvied it up. So then why is this not included in the enumerated list of Takanos of Yoshua? Why did you stop at the number 10? And not only that, the Gemara says, Va'ika, I have even another one, another condition that Yoshua instituted that's not enumerated in this Brisa, the 10. And that is, Rabbi Yishmael beno shel Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Desanya Rabbi Yishmael beno shel Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer, Tnai bezdin hu, Shehei zeh, Yored, Lesoch spei chavero, Vekotzeis socho shel chavero. If a person is running away from, let's say, bees, and he goes into the field of his friend, and what he does is he cuts off a branch of one of the trees of his friend, and that branch was the branch where the source of the dvorim, where the bees were located, lahatzil nochil shalom. And what he's trying to do here in this case is he's trying to save his group, if you will, of bees. In other words, there's one group of bees that's attacking another group of bees. V'nosein lo dmei socho shel chaver. In other words, if he cut down this branch, he'll pay for the branch. But since he's doing so to protect his own possessions, his friend, the owner of that branch, is not allowed to protect him and object to his doing so. Utnai bezdenu, and this is established by the courts. Shehaze. Okay, this is another tnai, which is also included in this brisa of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Just go back for a moment to the bees case. Rashi says, Nochil shel dvorim shel holchu l'sada chavero v'nisyashmu al sochsa shel ilon. Rashi doesn't learn that there's an attack between one bee group of bees and the other, the way I presented it. But Rashi would seem to indicate that the person who's in danger here of losing his bees is because his bees decided they would rather sit on the branch of someone else's tree than stay in the beehive. Now, he could go into the branch and sort of take out bee by bee, one at a time. Rashi says, "Im yitol echad echan hen parchos v'ovdos me'acher shenosnu einayim bi'osa socha." Once, for whatever reason, the bees are attracted to this branch, then if he removes them one by one, he's going to lose them. They're going to fly away. Lefichach kotzitza, he wants to cut down this branch so that the bees will no longer gravitate to this branch. V'nosein lo damim, and he pays for it. So that was the takana, allowing him to save his bees by cutting down someone else's socho, meaning the branch of his tree. And the next one is shofech yeno, that a person who sees that someone else has a barrel of dvash, that's honey, and honey is very expensive, a person coming along with his yayin, which is relatively inexpensive, is shofech yono, he pours out his wine, he's required to do so, and why? And he'll save the honey of his friend. Why? Because the honey is spilling out, and he will empty his barrel in order to put that barrel and collect and collect the honey in the barrel. And Rashi explains that we're talking about a case where the owner of the barrel of wine saw a person coming along with a barrel of honey, and the barrel of honey split and cracked. And here, basically, what Beis Din is stipulating is that the owner of the honey has a right to force the owner of the wine to spill out his wine in order to collect the honey and save his honey within the context of the mitzvah Hashavas Aveda. Now, if the owner of the wine was motivated to pour out his wine at his own initiative to save someone else's honey, that's a little bit different. Now we're talking about a case where Beis Din made a tanai and they forced him to empty his wine in order to catch and save his friend's dvash. Now, the worth of wine is less than the worth of dvash, as we said before, and therefore, yitol pachos dvash b'shovi kol ha'yayin. What he does is, when the Braisa says, v'notel d'meyeno mitoch d'vshano shel chavero, it means he takes that amount of dvash, which has the value of the yayin that he spilled out. Now, it would seem the way Tosus learns here, and the Rashba is more outspoken about it, that had he acted on his own initiative, then he could not collect for his wine. He could only collect for the barrel, whatever you would charge someone for the use of a barrel in this case, or for the labor, the effort that he put in. Maybe you'd pay a worker for the effort in order to save the wine. Tosus and the Rashba also explain that this case was where the honey was dripping out slowly. It was leaking, because if it wasn't dripping out slowly but rather gushing out, that would be considered hefker, and then the owner of the wine could claim that he was kona the dvash min hefker. The next case of the Tanai Beis Din here in this Braisa Rabbi Shmuel is the case of Sheheze Mefarek es Eitzov Vitoen Pishtano Shel Chavero Vinotel Tmei Eitzov Mitoch Pishtano Shel Chavero. Here's a case where a person will take apart Eitzov. What does it mean to be Mefarek Eitzov? His donkey, as a beast of burden, is carrying wood on its back. And the person with this wood on his donkey's back would have to unload Lefarikas Eitzov, his wood, Vitoin Pishtan Shchaver, in order to pick up the flax of his friend and put it on the donkey. And the reason for this, again, is because the value of the flax exceeds that of the wood. And in order to save the flax, he would even have to be mefarek the wood from his donkey, v'toim pishtonu shel chavero. And then, what does it mean? How much does he get reimbursed? Now, again, why is the pishton of his friend about to be destroyed, or lost, I should say, is because the pishton on his friend is on his friend's donkey, and the donkey just collapsed. There's no way of transporting this pishton, so therefore it'll be lost. And the owner of the Eitzim, who was Mefarik his Eitzim, he collects Dmei Eitzim Mitov Pishtano Shel Chavero. He takes some portion of the pishton of the flax that corresponds to the value of the Eitzim that he had to lose in order to save his friend's flax. So this is another Tanai Beis Din. Beis Din instituted and compelled a person to save his friend's mamon, even if it means he'll have to take a loss, but he can be compensated for that. Shalmanas kein hinchil Yoshua l'Yisrael esa'aretz. Now the Gemara later on in Daf Kuftes Vav Amid Beis seems to indicate that im asa kein ein lo ela scharo, that if he took a loss in order to save his friend from a greater loss, he only has his schar, which sounds like he doesn't get compensated for his loss, he just gets paid as a laborer. And therefore, as we said before, Tosfos and the Rashba, based on that sugya later on, claim that we're talking about a case where the Baal Hadvash compelled the Baal Hayayin, or in the case of Eitzim, the Baal Eitzim, to take that loss, to throw out the, remove the Eitzim, or pour out the wine. And in such a case, the owner of the wine, the owner of the Eitzim, has a right to be compensated. If, on the other hand, the Baal Hayayin himself, that's the sugya later on in Kuf Tes Vav, on his own initiative, decided to spill out his wine, he cannot collect for his wine from the Baal Hadvash. But Yochel Lomer Lo Shoyedochek Umatzelos Hadvash, the owner of the Dvash, would say that, you know what, I could have found some way of saving the Dvash without losing the wine. In any event, we have here a list of three different takanos: one about Hotzah's volume, another one about cutting down the branches in order to save your dvorim, and requiring you to take a loss on your yayin or your eitzim in order to save his dvash or his pishton. These are all takanos, and they weren't enumerated in the brisa. And the Gemara answers: Biyichidoi lo kamrinon. These types of conditions are not mentioned, enumerated in the Braisa, because they were reflecting individual opinions, what we call it, Adas Yochid. For example, Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yishmael. Our Braisa that enumerates the Tanoim of Yoshua is discussing the Tanoim that were given over and transmitted as the Tanoim, the conditions that Yoshua made without any name, in other words, Stam means anonymous, and those are the 10 Tanoim, and there are no more than those 10 conditions that were established by Yoshua. And perhaps what the Gemara is indicating is that those regulations which are called Tanai Bezdin, that are mentioned by Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Shmuel ben Oshel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, these were individual opinions, they weren't necessarily the majority opinion, whereas the list in our Brisa of the 10 of Yoshua ben Nun, those are majority opinions, not minority opinions, not dissenting or individual Tanoim. And Tosfos goes on and explains that the additional stipulations all have one common idea, which means that somebody has to suffer a lesser loss in order to save someone else for a greater loss. And later on in the Gemara, that's going to be presented as a machlokes between Rabbi Yishmael and other Tanoim. And it's logical to assume that the other Tanoim rejected these Tanoim, these stipulations, and therefore they were left out of the Brice. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. Now we finished Pei Aleph Amid Beis, and Emir Tzem next Shia, Pei Beis Amid Aleph.